joined by our guest today, Carl Steiner. How you going, Carl? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yep. I'm in Galatea, organic certified dairy farmer, and milking 200 cows on 100 hectares with the plus 40 hectares we use for lucerne and grass. But, yeah, that's what we do here, yeah.
All right. And for folks who might not know, Carl, I mean, where is Galatea?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, not many people know where it is. We're 74 kilometres from Rotorua and 84 kilometres from Whakatane and 100 kilometres from Taupo.
All right.
So in the middle, in the triangle.
And it's got on the way to Murupara.
That's right, yeah. Murupara is just on the other side of the river, and the Kaingaroa Forest is on two sides of us, and the Yirrawarra National Park's on the other side.
Very nice, very nice indeed. Yeah. And it's an interesting name, Galatea, for New Zealand. And how did that happen like that, Carl?
It's Greek word for milk white.
Milk white?
Yeah, which is interesting.
Okay.
It all started with World War II. They had the ships that shipped fruits all around the world, and one of them was called, the British ones, of course, called HMS Galatea, and it was quite a white-grey colour ship, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Colour, obviously.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, it is dairy farming area, though. There's 70 dairy farms here.
All right.
Yeah.
And there's also, I remember you saying to me one day, that there's a couple of very interesting collections in Galatea too.
There is, yeah. Yeah, there's motorbike collection, beer can collection, car collection.
Is it the world's biggest beer can collection, I remember you saying?
It is, yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
About 14,000 beer cans, all different. They're not all Steinlager or DB, they're all different.
14,000 beer cans, far out.
Yeah, that's my cousin Barry.
Right.
Barry Steiner, yeah.
All right. And who collects the motorbikes?
Guy down the road, Peter Wilmot. He used to own the Suzuki dealership in Auckland. And he's got quite a collection of motorbikes there. He's not showing them to too many people yet. But and the cars of my uncle. He's got mostly Australian and English cars, like the Falcons and the Ford Falcons and the Cortinas and Ford, I should say. Ford collection.
Right.
Yeah. There's one Mini there.
All right.
Yeah, and he's got the oldest four-cylinder car in New Zealand and the last V8 Falcon ever made in Australia, yeah.
What year would that have been, the last V8 that was ever made?
Only 3 years ago, or less than 3 years ago.
Ah, right, okay, yeah.
The last one by accident, yeah.
All right. Interesting, man. So there's a few good reasons for folks to come down Galatea for a little Jack Noy, Carl.
That's right, yeah. Oh, plus we've got the natural scenery around, of course, yeah, the national park, the Yirrawarra National Park.
Yeah.
The Whirinaki Forest Park as well.
Okay, so you're right by Whirinaki as well, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, trout fishing.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, and Kaingaroa Forest, of course, there's a lot of interesting things happening around that over the years, too.
Yeah, okay, then. Like what? Yeah.
Well, just the different ways of being cutting down trees and different trucks and different lots of things, like the Whakatane Museum's a lot of information on that, and the Rotorua Museum's not open anymore, unfortunately, but a lot of stuff there as well.
Right. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Plenty to see and do, Galatea.
There is, yeah. Yep, there's whitewater rafting as well down the rivers.
So would that be... The Motu go through there?
No, that's further over coming... Well, it's not far from here, funny enough. It's just over the Yirrawarra National Park, or partway over it, I should say.
Ah, on the other side of the Uruweras. Ah, right.
Yeah,
all right. Well, I guess tell us a little bit about yourself, Carl. I mean, how long you been there on your farm doing you do, and where did you get into organics and that kind of thing?
Yeah, okay. I've always had the notion, I guess, to say everything should be natural and no chemicals. Just sort of seen a lot of people with health problems caused by chemicals in their system. And, this is about 20 years ago I thought of that and went to a few organic days around the country, but I didn't own a farm, of course, by then. So, um, But in the last 6 years, we've converted to organic, and we've brought the farm as well. And yeah, and it's going really well, other than a few dry seasons. Yeah. And it's pretty much what the all the environmental groups and things want New Zealanders or New Zealand farmers to do, really, is basically change to more sustainable, less diesel used, no chemicals, basically, unless you really have to, for the animal welfare side of things.
Hey, and I might ask you, Carl, I mean, like, there's a lot of people, you know, regen ag this, regen ag that, talking about it. So yeah. Maybe just make it clear and plain for the listeners, you know, what is regen and what is organic?
Yeah, well, organics basically covers the whole lot when it comes to helping, being good for the environment and healthy food. But regen is like a simpler way of getting into the system. It just means cutting back on things you can farm without, basically, which is chemicals, urea, possibly, on some of the farms. They go without. They're planting more trees, shade for the cows, lots of different types of grasses. And when I say grasses, most of them aren't actually grasses. There's a lot of other plants that cows can eat that grow all year round, and the deep rooting plants rather than shallow rooting. Because there's a lot of animal welfare regulations coming in fairly soon to do with the chemical use and urea use and phosphate use and shade for the cows is another thing that's coming in one day soon, and the carbon tax and a lot of things changing. But we're, as an organic farmer, or even some of the regenerative farmers, are already doing it. We're already where the standard is changing to,
And organics has been around for quite a while, hasn't it, Carl?
In New Zealand. It's been around for over 100 years. The distant ancestors of ours, Rudolf Steiner, he actually was the first one to write all about it. And way back then, putting compost on vegetable gardens and things like that, they realised it was making a difference, and looking after the wildlife around it, and it makes all the difference the way things grow.
So was Rudolf Steiner your great-great-great-granddaddy?
Somewhere, I'm not 100% sure, but according to my grandparents, we are related, But he wasn't really a farmer, though, as such. He was more to do with observing what was going on and writing it down, basically,
Because was it 7 or 8 essays or lectures or something he gave, wasn't it, about agriculture?
Yeah, pretty much, I'm not 100% sure on how many there was, But that was the start of it, And but even back then, you wouldn't think there'd be any issues with chemicals, but there wasn't really. It was just like they were finding ground was very deficient after farming the same place for more than 3 or 4 years, and they decided to start bringing in compost and lime. They probably didn't have a lot of things they could use. In the transport situation way back then, it didn't bring in a 30-ton load of super phosphate or anything like that, or urea.
It would have been a wagon. It would have been like a horse and cart full or something, maybe.
That's right,
Interesting, man. And so I know you've been, was it just last week, wasn't it, you were saying that you've been giving a couple of lectures to some students at Massey University about tree planting on farms.
That's right, and I just the, on the side of the advantages and disadvantages, I guess, and we've had both. One thing is planting the correct type of tree. Especially on a dairy farm, we have to plant trees that don't taint the milk, and that's quite hard information to find. Even on the internet, that's very limited because each country's got different trees and different species and different colour leaves and all sorts and different nuts that are toxic and berries, and just ongoing, really. But we've come up with a list of about 70 plants that can be fed to cows, and plants that, or trees, I should say, mostly trees that they say it's vertical farming. Where
that's a lot more than I thought there would be, Carl.
There's lots of others. We just found the common ones in New Zealand that don't cause any health problems to the cows and don't taint the milk, basically. So there's a lot of others that sheep and beef farms can use and have no issues, but we're sort of concentrating on the dairy side of it first, and then they're going to work on the rest from there. and some areas they've already done a lot of research on that. But like the willows and poplars and fig trees and a lot of the fruit trees, that they basically grow like a weed, and cows can basically chew them off at the ground and they'll grow again.
Mm.
Yeah, so and produce milk off it.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And, yeah.
Because there is legislation going around as we speak, isn't there, about kind of making it mandatory for trees going on farms and things, isn't
it? That's right, yeah, to do with the carbon plan. Basically, the not necessarily the New Zealand government, but the United Nations and all the Global Energy Commission, is one of them. They're basically going to try and fix the environment as quick as possible, and landowners are the only way to do that, really. And also, I guess, in the ocean, they're going to cut back on a lot of fish species, or try to. But yeah, there's a lot of things there as well. But the regulations basically saying every landowner is going to be a carbon trader. And if you want to get out of the carbon trading system, you've got to plant trees to offset your carbon use. There's option one, which is pay carbon tax. Option two is to plant trees or crops that are going to quench carbon. But at this stage, as far as I've read from everything, there's not a lot to... Well, they're working on it. They're testing of the land to see how much carbon you are sequestering into the ground.
Yeah,
that's going to be the hardest thing, is actually having a good system for that, for testing it. So at this stage, they just basically plant trees, 15 trees per hectare, which sounds like a lot. But not actually when you work it out, because when they say tree, it could be a flax bush, it could be a fruit tree, it could be a grapevine, it could be willows, poplars, pines. I don't know if they're going to include blackberry, or probably not. But anything that can be measured from an overhead photo, like with Google,
yeah,
a satellite image, and so they're going to get an idea of what percentage of your farm is covered in trees, and that's going to alter how much carbon tax you're going to pay.
Okay.
Yeah, so at this stage they're looking at, in 2025, they're going to start that in June, I think it was. I think it's something like 2 cents per kilogram milk solids.
Mm.
And similar for a per kg of meat off a sheep and beef farm.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how they're going to do vegetable farms, and that's more of an animal side of thing, but I haven't seen any paperwork on that side of it.
All right.
Yeah, but like standard house section's already got too many trees. They've already met the standards. Even a golf course in most cases have. But a lot of farms have got trees, but... it's just you got with the system, you've actually got the options of planting it, what they call scattered planting, which is what I'm doing, which is just rows along the fence lines, like away from water troughs and power lines and things like that, and then you've got row planting, which is like in the pine forest, I guess, where it's just rows and rows of trees, so you can do a whole paddock. So it's 15 trees per hectare per land title, which is the way it's worded. And
okay, that's the same for dairy and sheep and beef, is it all?
It is, yeah. It's all the same, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's a slight variation though in what they're going to charge you, because sheep and beef don't normally use as much fuel in making the end product,
right?
And also not as much fertilizer. Yeah, so it's all to do with that.
Okay.
But basically, grass could be included in the carbon plan if you let it grow to full term. Like, the carbon that's going into the plant is going into the ground, but if you graze it off, you've released it again by putting it through the animal.
Right.
So if you let the grasses or pastures grow fully, when I say fully, like, say a plant takes 120 days to produce seed, if you let it go right to full term, and if it drops its seeds, you've actually put the carbon back in the ground, because the plant dies off slightly and then regrows again the next year, or the next growth cycle. So you're actually sequestering carbon into the ground with that, whereas if you're on a 30-day round, for example, you're not actually sequestering carbon, you're actually releasing it every 30 days.
Right. Okay.
So that's that's where the what they call the buffalo grazing system is coming in with a lot of the regenerative farms, but it is quite hard to get it all working right. A mindset, really, a change of mindset, not just relying on ryegrass.
Yeah, and I'd say it'd be particularly difficult dairy farming wise to extend that rotation out, wouldn't it, Carl?
Yeah, we thought that too, but we're out to 60, 70 days, and it's no issues at all.
Okay.
But we need to go further.
Right.
But we've had to plant a lot of different varieties of plants to do that.
So how many species would you have on your property, do you think?
Last count, we had 47 that we'd added to it, and there's probably 35 that are already there.
Gee whiz. So what's that like, 80-odd?
Yeah, there's quite a few natural ones,
yeah,
which you don't normally see very often because of we're grazing it all the time.
Yeah.
There is a lot more. You can go over 140 different species if you want to, but this count we had was done by a farm advisor, and it was done in October when it's the best-looking grass in this area. And it was mostly the more dominant ones at that time of the year, you see, because each time of the year it changes.
Yeah, yeah.
So winter would have been quite a different look, a lot of plants growing.
So how many plants have you...
In a square area. They just sort of measured it out and basically counted. Yeah, right.
All right. And so, like, when you say, like, things just pop up, I mean, how many varieties would you, because you've left the grazing go longer, how many varieties do you think just popped up because they were just there in the soil?
Well, we've trialled one area that on the farm, one paddock, mostly because we had silage stacks and things in the paddock and round bales. We didn't really want the animals in there too much anyway. But we've had bracken grown in the paddock that's a native, and we've had other little trees and things pop up that we don't really know what they are, and things that would normally grow in the garden that was left long enough.
Yeah.
And we've even had the odd fern pop up.
Interesting.
But when I say pop up, they're only really small. Yeah. If you leave it longer, you do get a lot of other varieties, and it does a natural seed cycle. That's probably the most important thing. It everything reseeds. The 120 days is a reseeding cycle for 90% of the plants.
Right. Yeah.
Actually, might be more than 90%. It's just that's how nature intended it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it must have taken a little while to get your rotation stretched out that long. I mean, how'd you kind of go about that one, Carl?
Yeah, well, that was actually the hardest thing to get around that. When you've got plenty of grass, you start feeding out. Yeah, and you reduce the round down. So, we got 3.5 hectare paddocks on the farm, for example, and each milking, we break that into one-eighth of the paddock, whereas before we were giving them twice as much area. But now we've got a lot more in that small, shorter area.
Right.
So it's just working it out. Like, you have to work it when your active growing time is per year. Like, we've pretty much 3 months when everything grows the best.
Yeah.
And then you got the other 9 months of the year. You have to work out how long your grazing round's going to be over that time, and where it's not growing at its best. And we worked out, like I say, most plants. So about 90 days would work quite well for our farm.
Okay.
But we don't have to go to the full 120 that I can see, but it may vary in different areas.
Right.
Yeah. So it'd be three and a bit rounds of the farm per year.
All right. And so did you have to do like a bit of fencing in that to make it all work, or you just like break feed it out here and there?
Just break feed, yeah.
I can imagine that'd be the most difficult kind of thing you have to do, is actually try and instigate it in the first place.
It is, we tried it last season and we buggered it up because we end up giving them too much at the wrong time, and because the idea is having 2 foot of ground cover, basically you're not susceptible to drought or frost. The plants aren't getting damaged by those, and we get high frost and low rainfall here over summer. But the other months of the year are going really well.
All right.
So we had to find a balance. Yeah, that's the hardest thing. And also when you spend a lot of money on all these extra plants you want grown in your paddocks, you don't want to have a short grazing cycle anyway, because they only grow once. They don't get a chance to establish, and they don't get to reseed. And the 90 days, there's a lot of plants that do drop their seeds in the 90 days, well, ryegrass being one, of course. But it still depends on different times of the year for different things there. So just have to find a happy medium and try it out.
Yeah. And I mean, and I mean, going organic, I mean, that must have been a difficult decision too, like not using, you know, your synthetic fertilisers and all your pesticides and herbicides and stuff like that.
We weren't really using any chemicals anyway. It's about 20 years since we used any antibiotics or penicillin that we've had to put in the cows. Like the vet's done a few things like with sore feet and things like that in the past, but this is before we even changed to organic. And we were only system one, system two anyway. Some of the ones that are at the high end of the scale, system five, will really find it hard to change. But the way things are going, they're pretty much going to have to, unless they want to pay heaps of carbon tax. And everyone wants them to reduce cattle numbers on farms by, I think, 15 to 20%. And we've already done that years ago, so it wasn't really an issue for us. And the cost, like 20 years ago, for example, it was about $8,000 to do the certification paperwork each year. About a year ago, it was $2,800. Now it's about $3,200, so it has gone up again.
Wow, man. Yeah, it's quite a lot of money, isn't it?
But at least the main thing is you know you're not ruining the environment and you're looking after the things for the future, and and a lot of costs disappear as well.
Yeah.
Like we're not teat spraying, we're not using any penicillin, we're not spraying out paddocks. If we do cultivate a paddock, mostly for lucerne, we're actually grazing it down hard and ploughing it. And have it all fully cultivated and planted back in the same day. Is the plan, but doesn't always happen like that.
Have you been keeping tabs on the organic products bill going through Parliament at the moment?
Yeah, I have. There's a few things going to make things awkward, like buying a patch of land and then later on down the track adding another farm to it. That's going to be an issue. But same thing, it's all going to come down to who the certifiers are and what they think about it, that last little bit.
Righto, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like Assure Quality and Biogrow. And, you know, NOP and EU, they're all the main ones we deal with.
So the bill's basically got it. What, none of those things will exist anymore, or just be one kind of outfit,
still,
is it?
They still exist. The organics product bill's only really a international standard that they want all countries to have a baseline, and then they add on each different certifier is going to have a slightly different thing, which they seem to anyway. They do have different ideas on things. Yeah.
Okay. And what are your thoughts about the organic products bill going through, Carl?
I was supposed to go to a meeting at Whakatane the other day, and I didn't get there. I don't know every detail on it, but someone like Bill Quinn with Organic Ag, he's got a lot of stuff on his website.
Yep.
And ONS has got the list too, of course. It's all available to have a look at. Even Dairy NZ theoretically should have it in their system as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. No. I remember talking to our local MP about it. It's generating a lot of discussion for sure. The organic products bill. Either way, you know, some people are quite supportive of it, and some people. I remember talking to Bill Quinn about it, and he's not so super keen on it as it is. But it's a really interesting one.
And it's basically making things harder, which is the same with any sort of farming at the moment. We've got the three waters as well. I'm not sure what the outcome of that. Well, that's going to be either yet.
That's another one bubbling along, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't studied that too hard yet, but be worth looking at.
Yeah, mostly like the farmers have a lot of irrigation and high water use, and it's going to cost them there at the stage.
Yeah. No, quite right, man. And anyway, Carl, we've kind of I got to go. So thanks very much for coming on here. No, I really appreciate it, Carl. And we didn't quite cover all the things I wanted to talk about. So I might have to get you on at some stage in the future and have another chat, Carl, if that's going to work. Cool, man.
Yeah,
All right. Thank you very much, Carl. I really appreciate you coming on the show. And, take care, man. Thank you.
Okay. Right.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Right.